obviously the reason why – the first reason is that they just passed that law – or passed the law. Let me – the federal court decision yesterday. And I know that, you know, this area of the state especially has a lot of support for concealed carry. Would you like to see a concealed carry law passed in Illinois?
I would. It's something that I think if it's done responsibly – and it has the proper safeguards and background checks and you know, training both in the classroom and on a firing range. I think it is something that I would support and something that I've been working towards. And it's important to note that Illinois is the only state that does not have some version of a concealed carry on their books. So the decision yesterday by the courts is really pretty significant. It's it lays out a timetable for the General Assembly to come up with the state to come up with a process to allow concealed carry. So it's going to be certainly very, very much talked about and discussed in the upcoming session.
And do you think Illinois would benefit from a concealed carry law in the aspect of, you know, sort of philosophically it's, you know, a right that's guaranteed by the Constitution? Or do you think that it's something that the you know, the citizens would benefit from, you know, in more of a concrete, actual, like, I guess you would say, like, legislative or procedural way?
Well, it is, and basically that's what the court said yesterday, is that it is guaranteed by the Constitution. I mean, that's basically what the opinion said, is that that it could not be restricted. So I would say the state would benefit from that standpoint. You know, legislatively, I guess the second part of that question, how would we benefit? I guess I look at it more as from the standpoint that there are certainly people who believe that they have the right to protect themselves. And this, although it's probably, you know, pretty rare that occasion would arise, but that this would allow an individual that ability to do that. And, you know, I think the argument always filters down to a criminal, somebody that's going to commit a crime with a weapon, the likelihood of them going through background checks and training and acquiring a firearm in a legal way is very, very remote. So the people that are going to apply for a concealed carry permit are people who will have gone through the proper training, background checks, have purchased that firearm in a responsible legal manner, and so it's going to give them the ability. Some would say to give them the ability to at least be on a level playing field in the event that they are somebody does attempt to harm them.
And you'd mentioned before that you think it's something that could be done in a responsible manner. And you know, if you have any sort of input into how this legislation would be crafted, let's say, what are some of those things that you would like to see as part of a responsible concealed carry policy?
And I've kind of touched on a couple of them, but to reiterate, certainly background checks will be a part of it. Proper training, both in a classroom as well as on a firing range, I think would be very important to make sure that somebody that has a weapon certainly has the knowledge on how to use it in a safe manner. Legislation that we've worked on in the past has had the input from local county sheriffs, and that's why they have actually been supportive of the legislation in the fact that if somebody applies for a permit, oftentimes it's the local county sheriff that would be familiar with any background history with regard to the person that's applied. You know, if they feel you know, if they wanted the ability to have some input into this decision. Ultimately, the legislation, again, that we've worked on had the Illinois State Police were the ones to actually do the final approval process. But, you know, those are some of the things that would need to be in there. And, of course, as is already current and on our books, is the process for purchasing a firearm to make sure that that's done in a lawful way as well.
And, you know, some, you know, gun control advocates would say that more weapons – you know, maybe a safety issue. Do you feel that, you know, that those responsible measures, those checks on this process, those safety measures would be enough to sort of counteract any maybe, you know, decrease in public safety as more firearms would be available?
Well, I know that that argument has been out there, and to my knowledge, nobody has ever proven where that's actually the case. In other words, as I mentioned earlier, 49 other states have some version of concealed carry, and nobody has been able to bring proof evidence to the table that says by having a concealed carry legislation on their books that has actually increased the number of firearm accidents, incidents, you know, crime, whatever. So I just look at it as if you have an individual that's a law-abiding citizen that is properly trained, that has done the background checks, and they know how to use a weapon, you know, in a safe manner, that that I can see no way that that's going to actually increase the possibility of violence. As long as you've made sure that those weapons aren't in places where you wouldn't want them. For example, and I should have mentioned this earlier, you know, perhaps in a bar, you know, where there's alcohol being served, would you want somebody to carry a weapon in there? I think that that is something that obviously would need to be looked at very carefully.
And sort of one final question on this issue. I know, you know, as a Democratic state senator, you know, sometimes a lot of issues now are sort of boiled down to party lines, and, you know, gun control and gun rights seems to be one that a lot of people try to divide on that line. You know, maybe speak briefly on how you arrived at, you know, at a position that a lot of people wouldn't align with your party affiliation, and have you, you know, received any pushback from people within your party because of this stance?
Well, absolutely, I have. But let me back up first of all and say that here in Illinois, although it's often portrayed as a Democrat versus Republican issue, I don't see it that way. I see it more as a regional issue because in the research that I have done, every legislator downstate, now we could use that term just a little bit loosely, but let's just say that every legislator downstate outside of the city of Chicago, regardless of their party affiliation, supports concealed carry. So to say that it's a Democrat-Republican issue in the state of Illinois, I don't think is an accurate portrayal. So it's more of a regional issue. And quite frankly, many of the legislators in the city of Chicago and even in the suburbs, I think that they very much understand why this legislation is important, why, from our perspective, why we think it's something the state of Illinois needs to do. They understand that. They also are dealing with other issues, and they, you know, their issues are gang violence and things of that sort. And so their constituents certainly have a different attitude on it than ours.
All right. And sort of transitioning a little bit to, you know, maybe some other things that may come up this veto session. Do you believe that, you know, I know there's been a new push for pension reform, and it's something that I believe, as last I've heard, that Governor Quinn hasn't really commented on the most recent push. Sort of two questions on this. Do you think this most recent push will sort of bear fruit, as they say, and are you in favor of that?
Well, so the a group of legislators in the House, a bipartisan group of legislators, came out about 2 weeks ago and I guess I would say put forth a framework for some pension reform, for a pension reform. So some proposals that they thought would be something that they could support. And that framework has – and again, there wasn't a lot of details. They did kind of take a little bit here and there and some from some different places. But they themselves have referred to it as a framework. And quite frankly, some of them even said there's things in here we like, there's some things in here we don't. But what they were trying to do was just move the ball forward, so to speak. They were trying to gain some momentum to try to bring some of the different players, if you will, into the discussion and try to come up with a solution. Scott, we have to find a solution to this problem. Under its current form, the rising cost, the annual payment that the state of Illinois has to make to the five retirement systems is simply not sustainable. This year, that payment was the payment the state had to make was a little over $5 billion. Next year, it goes to $6 billion. Next year, it goes up, and it continues to go up to $10, $11, $12 billion on down the road. So we simply don't have the revenue, the additional revenue, because if we have to take money out of the general revenue fund to make those payments to the retirement systems, that leaves less money for education, transportation, health care, right on down the list. So that's why we have to figure out a way to level that cost off. It has been obviously talked a great deal. We've talked a great deal about it this year. We go back into session on January the 3rd, and that's from the 3rd through the 9th of January is the last days of the current General Assembly. I know it's going to be talked about then, and then we start the 98th General Assembly on the at noon on the 9th of January. So then we start another two-year session. A lot of people have said, you know, have asked me, do you feel like that we will, that the General Assembly will try to address this issue in you know, during those dates from the 3rd through the 9th? I think there will be a push to do that. I just don't think it's going to happen. Personally, I don't think the support is there. It's too complex of an issue. There are too many fingers or tentacles to that to this issue that I just don't think we have enough time to address and answer all those concerns and try to reach a consensus on this issue. The sooner we do it, the better. The longer we wait, the more difficult it's going to get. I understand that. And yet, I also understand that you know, trying to reach a consensus on it and do something that is constitutional, you know, we can pass legislation that, you know, in theory corrects the problem. But if it's not constitutional, then all we have done is we've wasted the time and the energy and the money to fight it through the courts, number one. And then number two, if it's found to be unconstitutional, then we've wasted more time and we're even further behind the eight ball. So we need to try to craft something that is going to have a bipartisan agreement and that is going to address the constitutional question and, of course, then solves the problem in the long run.
You know, and also we're sort of as we reach the end and going to the next session, are there any any priorities that you yourself would like to see passed either in this last little bit here or, you know, starting out the next session?
You know, it's a great question. To me, the pension question is the number one, without a doubt, issue that has to be resolved because it affects the budget in such a dramatic way. And when you talk about pension payments, the budget, money that's available, so from there everything kind of goes, you know, flows downhill, so to speak. So education funding, we're here in Macomb, Western Illinois University, one of the biggest economic engine that we have in this entire region. Last year they took some cuts to the university. You know, what we're trying to do in the upcoming year is to make sure that we can either, you know, that there aren't any further cuts or if there are, that they're minimal at best. So there's all these different issues that that evolve around that one question. And so, you know, my focus is really on that issue. Once we come up with a solution to that, yes, there'll be obviously other issues, legislation that we'll be working on throughout the session, but that is the number one issue. And I'd like to go back to the pension for just a second, if I could.
Absolutely.
Because one thing that that is being heavily debated is this, what they refer to as the pension cost shift. In other words, passing the cost of employees in school districts, community colleges, and at the university level, passing that cost on to the to those prospective bodies. And that is something that would have a very detrimental impact, financial impact on those three entities that I talked about, especially given, and if I could just take a step back and talk about it from the local school district's perspective, they've already been hit with a reduction in the general state aid, number one. They also saw a dramatic reduction in their transportation funds, so the amount of money that they're reimbursed from the state for transportation costs, that's number two. And then if this pension cost shift is also transferred to the local districts, I see that as strike number three, basically. So the districts are already struggling, and that is something that from a legislator representing a rural part of the state that has a lot of small school districts that generally cover a big territory, and this transportation issue is a big issue for many of them, I think that those are factors that need to be included in this discussion as well.
And it seems like, you know, no matter what, there's going to be some pain somewhere, like that the contract that was broke with AFSCME recently. It seems like regardless of where it comes from, there is going to be some sort of hard decision or hard pain. And, you know, are you prepared to maybe not necessarily in that specific area, but, you know, make those hard calls?
You know, that's a great question, and I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there, because there is not going to be a solution that everybody, or for that matter, anybody's going to like. There is going to be pain. There is going to be consequences of what we do. I'm just trying to do it. My goal is to do it as fairly and equitably as possible. In other words, if there needs to be a gradual cost shift, the pension cost shift over to the districts and the community colleges, for example, then that ought to be what also should be taken into consideration. There is the previous cuts that they've seen to the general state aid and to transportation, for example. In other words, if we can fully fund the transportation and if we could fully fund the general state aid, maybe that cost shift, and if you talk with the school districts, they would tell you this, you know, yes, perhaps we could start to absorb that cost, and perhaps maybe we even should start to pay those costs. But given the other factors that they have been faced with financially, to not make some other changes and to just do that cost shift would be very detrimental.
All right, Senator, thank you very much for coming in.
Good to visit with you, Scott. Thank you.